Hello, and welcome to Merkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. I'm your host, Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zaroff, and this is podcast number 3. This series also has an accompanying website with show notes, links, patterns, and projects. Just head over to MerkwoodDesigns.com. That's MIRKWOODDESIGNS.com. Thanks to all of the feedback you've given me, good and bad, recently, there are 3 things I plan to work on. Number 1, I promise to use my pop filter when I'm recording. What's a pop filter? It's a sort of like a fabric screen that sits in front of the microphone, and its entire purpose is to dissipate the airflow of the person speaking into the mic so that sounds like pee don't pop in the mic, making a loud noise. My promise number 2, I promise to work on slowing down my speech. I have a tendency to speak really quickly, especially when I'm excited about something. And, you know, I think that comes from being the youngest in a large family. I had to speak really loudly and very quickly to get a word in edgewise with all of my sisters and brothers. Finally, I promised to talk more in depth about my projects, providing maybe a little bit more detail about how I did a particular technique or how I came up with an idea. I think that will help you know how my creative process works, and it might also encourage yours. Remember, I'm still pretty new to podcasting, so I appreciate any advice you'd like to give. Just email me, that's ruthann@merkwooddesigns.com. Today's bumper music is the song Green Sleeves, which is a 16th century ballad. You know, it was mistakenly attributed to Henry VIII. He supposedly wrote it for one of his many wives. You also might know it as the Christmas song, What Child Is This? Let's see, what have I been doing recently? Remember in the first podcast I mentioned that I would probably tell you a little bit more about my family, my husband, my son, and my cats, and so forth. Well, this week, Titus Andronicus, my son's newest kitty, was neutered. That was just so exciting. Poor little guy. Last week I took Titus to visit Teddy at his fraternity at the University of Michigan, and he really enjoyed going in the car for the ride and in visiting Teddy. So when I put him in his carrier on Monday morning to take him to the vet, I'm pretty sure he thought he was going on another adventure. I don't think he'll ever forgive me. But he's back to his normal wild self. He's the first cat we've ever had that ambushes us. He lays in wait under furniture and around corners, and then he jumps out at us. And I'm hoping that as he gets a little bit older, he's about 4 months old now, I'm hoping as he gets a little bit older, he mellows out a bit. But he is so smart, and he's the sweetest little guy. Anyway, last week, my friend Kathy and I went on our quarterly crafting adventure. Kathy and I both accepted early retirements from our jobs as instructional designers with a large information technology company. We retired on the same day about 2 years ago. And when Kathy first came to the group, I was her mentor for a while. I had to teach her, or not teach her, but, you know, help her get through our process of developing the software and the instructional designs that we used to do in the group. And as a matter of fact, I remember when she first interviewed to come into our group, one of the things that she presented as a sample of her work was a design for a greeting card. And I thought, first of all, it really stood out from all of the other people who had submitted work for consideration because it was so unique and so creative. Second of all, it was so beautifully written, so clear, so concise. And I'll tell you, Kathy makes the most beautiful cards you have ever seen in your life. I hope to ask her to be a guest artist in an upcoming show for my paper arts segment. So now Kathy and I maintain our friendship by getting together regularly, and we visit the number of craft stores in her neck of the woods, which is northeast of Detroit. I swear she has the best crafty stores in her area. One of our favorites is a store called Crafty Lady Trio. I'll have a link on the website, which is a marvelous selection of yarns, and one whole side of the store is devoted to needlepoint. If you ever watched the show Needle Arts on PBS, I think it's no longer on the air, but Needle Arts was a fabulous show devoted to various needle arts, but originally I think it started basically about needlepoint. Shea Pendre was the host of the show, and she is the needlepoint teacher at Crafty Lady Trio. So during last week's crafting adventure, this time Kathy's lovely daughter Jeannie accompanied us, Kathy inspired me to get a book and yarn and give crocheting a try. I have tried crocheting and knitting in the past, but I've never gotten past an inch or two because I am so tense when I work that the stitches never make it off the needles. I can't even slide them off the needles. Well, that's absolutely true about my knitting. My crocheting wasn't ever quite that bad. But guess what? This time, I actually finished a scarf. Sure, it was simply entirely single crochet, but I kept at it, and it's all done. There's a picture on the website. But the yarn is what made it very special. I used a beautiful Japanese Noro wool, which is a self-striping yarn. And just the other day, I purchased some more yarn and a set of hooks, hoping to make myself a hat. And I was going to say we'll see how successful I was, but guess what? I finished the hat last night. It is so beautiful. It is a very simple hat. And then this morning, I added a crocheted flower. And there's a picture of that on my website. I'm so excited to have made something that is useful and beautiful. And the scarf is useful and beautiful. And my husband has stolen the scarf. Oh, well. So when you get a chance, go to mirkwooddesigns.com and take a look at both my scarf and my hat. And I will tell you that if you have never tried crocheting, I would say go to the store, buy yourself just a simple book, or go to the library and get a simple book. Buy yourself a hank of yarn and a needle and give it a try. You know, I swore I would never be able to crochet in my whole life. And within a week, I ended up with a really nice scarf and an adorable hat. So if I can do it, you can give it a try too. Don't forget my continuing free Alice in Wonderland Red Work patterns. Today's free downloadable pattern is the Queen of Hearts. This is probably, well, it's my second favorite image from the Alice in Wonderland books. I still have an upcoming one that is my very favorite image. There's a link to the Red Work on my website. Oh, hey, I need to remind you that if you ever use any of my project sheets to make something, please take a photo of it and send it to me. I really hope to set up a gallery of your work. Stay tuned for the fiber arts section. Today's project is a wall hanging raw edge applique, and I'm calling it Meowing at the Moon. I really hope you'll enjoy it. Welcome back. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zaroff, and you're listening to Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity, and this is the Fiber Arts segment. Today's project is an original wall hanging I designed specially for this Halloween season. It's called Meowing at the Moon, and you can see a photo of it and download the project sheet on my website, mirkwooddesigns.com. You know that I have three cats, and so I had to find a way to make them appear somehow in probably every podcast. So today, you will see a silhouette of one of my cats, and as you can tell, he's meowing at the moon. Now, the project is super simple. When I decided I wanted to do this, from my thinking of the project, to designing it, to finishing and quilting and binding it, I think it took me 3 hours. Now that is 3 hours all the way from when the idea popped into my head to what you see my finished project on the website. As a matter of fact, come to think of it, I think that actually included drawing up the plans for the project sheet. I think I can't talk today. Actually, what I need to do is slow down. Then my tongue won't get in the way so much. I apologize that I talk so fast. Anyway, so back to my project. You'll need a variety of different fabrics. Basically, I really like batiks. I use them whenever I can because I think that there's a lot of movement in them with the mottled colors. So the background of mine is a really pretty blue. You can use a darker blue if you want, but I wanted the silhouette to stand out a little bit more, which is black. And if you use a really dark blue batik, the black, there's not quite enough contrast. So I used kind of a medium dark blue batik. And then my moon is a very pale yellow batik. And of course, my black silhouette is just simple black fabric. And I bound it with the blue batik. For my raw edge applique, I really like the product Steam-A-Seam 2 Light. If you've never used it, this is a fabulous product. It is fusible on both sides. And it has such a light hand that when you use it, you can barely feel that there's a fusible interfacing in your work. So you can actually layer fusible pieces on top of other fusible pieces, and your quilt will still have a pretty soft hand. I buy Steamaseam 2 Light by bulk on the roll. I think I get 25 yards at a time because I use it for so many products. Two of my sisters are art quilters. One of them in particular does fabulous landscape quilts. And so Karen and Pat and I actually share rolls. I'll buy the roll and then I'll ship their segment to them in the mail. Now the quilting motifs that I used are pretty simple and straightforward. For the background on the blue, I just kind of made swirls. I had in mind that I wanted to make it look a little bit like Van Gogh's Starry Night, so I made swirls in the background. On the moon, following the striations or the stripes in the batik fabric that I used for the moon, I just used horizontal stripey feel. And then I did not quilt at all on the silhouette because I wanted to pop out a little bit. I wanted it to look, to stand out, because I wanted it to be in the foreground of the picture. So I quilted around the edge of the silhouette, but not on the silhouette itself. Now to finish it off, I used Swarovski crystals. I did not use heat set crystals. I buy my crystals in bulk from a company called Fire Mountain Gems. There is a link on the website. And so I use a special glue called Jewel Bond glue. And it's the perfect glue for gluing flat back crystals onto fabric. It is permanent and it dries clear. Very easy to use. You can get that also at a number of stores, but also from Fire Mountain Gems. Now, I find as far as using crystals on projects, less is more. You want your project to stand out. You don't want everybody to stare at all the crystals and say, oh, that's pretty. Now, if you're doing a beaded work, that's entirely different. But when you're doing something where, for example, in Howling at the or Meowing at the Moon, my crystals represent the stars in the sky. And if you're way out in the country, your sky is probably really filled with stars. But where I am, it's a rural area, but we're fairly near an airport, so we only see a few stars in the sky. So I think I have maybe only a dozen crystals altogether glued on the background of my quilt, only in the blue section, because don't forget, stars are not in front of the moon. And the size of crystals that I used are the very smallest Swarovski AB flatback crystals that Fire Mountain Gems sells. I can't remember the size, but they are so tiny. They're maybe 1/32 of an inch. They sell them, they're millimeters, obviously, but that might translate to about 1/32 of an inch. And when I'm adhering the crystals, what I like to do is I'll take a toothpick and I'll dab a very small amount, a tiny pin dot of the glue onto the fabric, and then I'll use my finger and wet the tip of my finger and grab a crystal that way and carry it over to the glue dot and put it on top of the glue dot. That works best for me. I tried tweezers, but the slippery tweezers on the crystal, they kept popping and flying off all different places. I have crystals everywhere in my house because I've dumped a number of them, but I've lost a number when I tried gluing them different ways. So try the toothpick method, and then wetting your finger and sticking the crystal onto the little glue dot. It really works well for me. My Meowing at the Moon wall hanging measures about 12 inches square, but never forget that you can enlarge or reduce the pattern to suit your needs, and you can always add borders to make it even larger. Go to my website, mirkwooddesigns.com, for a link to this project and previous projects, and for show notes. Stay tuned for the paper art segment. To continue my Halloween theme, I'm offering a template for a simple mask that you can decorate to your heart's content. Welcome back to Mirkwood Designs, Adventures in Creativity. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zaroff. In today's paper crafting segment, I'm going to share instructions on how to make a really easy mask for Halloween. You can find the complete instruction sheet on the website, mirkwooddesigns.com. I actually had another project planned for today, and then I realized how close Halloween is, and I realized I wasn't going to produce another podcast before then, so I thought I would tell you how to make a really simple mask. Halloween, when I was growing up, was always one of my very favorite holidays. My girlfriend Donna and I mentioned in my first podcast, we made the best costumes, and we prowled the neighborhood. We were out till all hours, but, you know, that was a simpler day and time. Now a lot of parents keep their children home or have parties for them, which is probably a pretty good idea for their safety. Anyway, I drafted this template using my own face, so you might need to move the eye holes in or out, whatever you need to do. Plus, if you want to use the mask for a child, you'll probably have to reduce the size of the template a little bit. But if you look at the way I designed it, I think you could probably make it work for you just by modifying it slightly. You can probably figure out how to redraft it to suit your needs. For a really quick mask, you can print the template directly onto the back of a piece of decorated cardstock. I have fancy cardstock. I could probably open a paper store. I have collected fancy papers ever since I was, when I was in high school. I think I still have some papers back from then. When paper or cardstock for scrapbooking goes on sale, I make sure that I buy it in every color and every size that they have. My husband is a little bit mortified. He keeps finding my stash of paper. It's almost as bad as my stash of fabric. So what you can do is you can cut a piece of the cardstock, if it's not, if it's 12 by 12, for example, cut it down to 8.5 by 11, and make sure that you print the template onto the wrong side if it's a decorated cardstock. For example, if you look at the picture on the website, you'll notice mine is an animal print. So I put that into my printer, made sure I could print it on the back side of that, and then I cut it out with scissors, and then the eye holes, I just used a craft knife, an X-Acto knife, to cut the eye holes out. It was so quick and fast to do that, I couldn't even believe it. So I know you can do this project, but make it your own. Make it a little bit more creative by adding glue and glitter, or feathers would really add a lot to the mask. And then you would punch holes in either side for a ribbon, or what you could also do, instead of punching the holes, is adhere it on one side to a dowel using glue or tape. Now what I would do in that case is I would probably wait to decorate it until it's adhered securely to the dowel, and then once I know that the glue or tape is really going to hold it in place, then I would go ahead and decorate the mask. Again, you can find complete instructions for the Halloween mask on my website. Keep the template handy because it's perfect for a Mardi Gras mask next spring. Just decorate it with the traditional Mardi Gras colors of purple, green, and gold, and use a lot of sequins and glitter to give it a special festive look. Up next, finally, the recipe I promised, starring apples. It's my mom's apple dumpling recipe, to which I've added decadent caramel syrup. Stay tuned! Welcome back to Merkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon Zaroff, and this is the recipe segment. It's apple season here in Michigan, and as promised, I'm finally sharing my mom's recipe for apple dumplings, which I've made my own with the addition of caramel syrup. First, I'll let you know about some other recipe adventures I've had this past couple of weeks. Of course, I have to keep Teddy's fat cat cookie jar full, so I made oatmeal raisin cookies for him. But instead of raisins, I used dried tart Montmorency cherries, which are really wonderful. We have a Montmorency cherry tree in our yard, and they ripen about in July, and we get a bumper crop. They are the most fabulous tart cherries. Now, you just can't take them off the tree and eat them, although every year my husband grabs some and puts them in his mouth, and he makes the the silliest face because they're so sour. But they are perfect for cooking and baking because you can... I don't have much of a sweet tooth, so you can make them as sweet as you want. They're not overly sweet like if you were to buy canned cherries, canned cherry pie filling, which is usually a very sweet cherry. Anyway, so I plumped the cherries by soaking them in hot water for an hour or so before making the cookies, and then I drained the water off. I could have soaked them in brandy, and I really thought I would try that, but then I remembered the only brandy we have in the house is Courvoisier VSOP, which is a little bit pricey, and I did not have the heart to use that and then toss the brandy. Or I guess I could have drunk it, but then I don't think the cookies would have gotten baked. Anyway, so the recipe I used for my cookies can be found in my very favorite baking book, which is called Baking Illustrated. I subscribe to Cooks Illustrated magazine, which actually Baking Illustrated is published by those folks, and the latest issue has a recipe that they call the best shortbread. Well, I was skeptical because I've tried shortbread over the years, and no recipe has ever matched the first shortbread I ever had in my life. My husband's best friend was a student at Harvard University, and my sister lived in nearby in Watertown, Massachusetts. So back when my husband and I were in college, we flew out there. I stayed with my sister, and my husband stayed with his friend Greg. And we went into Faneuil Hall, did a little bit of sightseeing around Boston, and went to Faneuil Hall, and there was a store there called Baby Watson's. I'm not sure if it's still there. But back then, they sold, in addition to cheesecake, they sold shortbread cookies, which I had never had at that time. I think I was probably about 20 or 21 years old. Never had shortbread up until that point. So the interesting thing was, aside from having the shortbread for the first time in my life, I heard reggae music for the first time in my life, too, because that was the music that was playing over the sound system in Baby Watson's in Faneuil Hall. I don't know why, just that was just what they were playing. So for the first time in my life, I had shortbread and I heard reggae music. So in my mind, whenever I hear Bob Marley and the Wailers, I feel like having shortbread. And whenever I have shortbread, I have to be playing some reggae music. So until this recipe in the latest Cooks Illustrated magazine, I had unsuccessfully tried every recipe I could find in any cookbook, magazine, whatever, to make shortbread. Unsuccessfully. It was either too dry, so it would fall apart, it was too hard, like cardboard, or it was too soft and would just crumble into nothing. So unfortunately, all of my versions over the years did not live up to these fabulous Baby Watson's shortbread. Well, I'll tell you, in the latest Cooks Illustrated magazine, they call it the best shortbread, and I'll tell you, it is the best shortbread. Because of copyright issues, I can't share the recipe with you, but it is on newsstands now, and it is issue number 101, November and December 2009, and it's the recipe on page 22. So go to the store, pick yourself up a magazine, and give it a try. I guarantee you will not be disappointed if you're a shortbread lover. Okay, so let's get on to talking a little bit more about my apple dumplings. First, I want to talk about apple varieties. Now, I used Granny Smith for this recipe because they are ubiquitous. You can find Granny Smith. They're those big, bright green, shiny apples. You can find them any season in any store that sells fruit. And they really stand up well to baking because they're very firm. And they're very tart. Now, fruit tends to caramelize as it cooks and the sugars really come out. So if you start with a really sweet apple, it'll get cloyingly sweet. So I like to use a tart apple when I'm baking, for example, pies or in this case, the apple dumplings, because they do get sweeter as they bake and they become really delicious. And I like my apples to stay fairly firm when I bake. I like the way they feel in my mouth. If you like a softer apple, please feel free to use whatever your favorite baking apple is for this recipe. Now, a couple of other apples I've tried, and they were my mom's favorites. They are actually referred to now as antique apples because not many stores carry them. They don't have a long shelf life, so usually you have to go to a farmer's market or an apple orchard that has old apple trees. And those two kinds are Northern Spy and Winesap. Those are both really great apples for pie baking. Now, I'm going to tell you, when you go to the store, a regular grocery store, you're going to see these beautiful, gorgeous, perfectly formed apples. They're pretty colors, they're pretty shapes, and they're really shiny. I'm going to tell you, they're shiny because they wax them. And they do that with all sorts of different fruits and vegetables in the store. So you need to make sure that you peel them or you wash them before you eat them. But if you were to see Northern Spy or Winesap apples, they look sort of pitiful. They're misshapen, they often have marks on their skin, But I guarantee you that that's what you really want. You want these antique apples if you can find them. So if you ever find a fruit stand that has Northern Spy apples, those are ideal for apple pies. Now, over the last 20 years or so, there is a new variety of apple on the market. It was developed at the University of Minnesota, and it is called Honeycrisp. It's not a good baking apple, or at least I don't use it for baking at all, because it is the perfect eating apple. It's crisp, it's juicy, it has the best flavor. And when it's Honeycrisp season here in Michigan, I buy these by the bagful. Now, you can find them in markets around Michigan now. A couple years ago, you didn't see them in places, the grocery stores. You had to go to a farmer's stand. But now you can find them not only in the farmer's stand, thank goodness. I like to keep my local stores in local farmer stands in business. But now stores like Meijer and Kroger carry the Honeycrisp apples. Now, the cool thing is their season is fairly long. And even when the season is coming to an end, you can buy a lot and store them in the crisper in your refrigerator and have these wonderful apples well past the holidays. Last year, I was eating Honeycrisp apples well into February, and they still tasted great, and they still had great texture because I stored them in my crisper in the fridge. You can't do that with all apples, but Honeycrisps are, they're a magical apple. I hope you give them a try and you let me know whether you like the Honeycrisps as much as I do. Okay, now we're going to get to the recipe. As I mentioned, in my recipe, I used Granny Smith apples, but if you like a sweeter, softer apple, use Red Delicious or whatever you like. Now, a word about the caramel sauce. As I mentioned a little bit ago, I don't have much of a sweet tooth. I'd much rather spend my calorie allotment on rich, savory things instead of sugar. So the caramel sauce that I made might not be what you're expecting. It's a little bit bittersweet. It reminds me of the topping on top of creme brulee. You know that really crisp, hard topping that creme brulee has when they flame it with a torch? My son makes the fabulous creme brulee. Anyway, the topping is a little bit bittersweet because after the sugar caramelizes, it begins to develop another undertone, a dark undertone that's slightly bitter. That's what this caramel sauce is. It has the consistency and look of maple syrup, but it is just basically sugar and water, and the recipe follows my apple dumpling recipe. Now, if you like a creamy caramel syrup, you can go to the store and buy Sanders or whatever brand you like of store-bought syrup of your choice, or you can skip the caramel syrup altogether and serve your dumplings with milk, cream, whipped cream, ice cream, or you can just have them with nothing at all. You can see photos of the process of making the apple dumplings on my blog, mirkwooddesigns.com. And there's also a link to the recipe. Now, the recipe itself is really straightforward. The dough is a very simple dough, and you'll notice that it has no sugar in it. So you can use this dough for any variety of things. It's just flour, salt, baking powder, shortening. And if you remember from my last recipe, I really like to use lard rather than Crisco. But if you don't like the idea of using lard, Crisco works just fine. And then a little bit of milk, just enough to bring the dough together. And it makes a really soft dough. You roll it out into 8-inch thick rounds. This recipe makes 4 servings. Actually, it's more like 8 servings. You share your dumpling with your best friend or your true love, or if you want to eat the whole thing, that's fine too. But my husband and I actually split the dumpling because it makes quite a large dumpling. And the filling ingredients are even simpler. It's just apples, butter, and cinnamon to taste. Now, I like a lot of cinnamon. I get my cinnamon from Penzi's Spices online, or we have a Penzi's here in town, so I like to go there and give them my business. And then, if you remember when I made the raisin cookies last time, I made something called simple syrup, which is one part water to one part sugar. And at one point in the recipe, you take the dumplings out of the oven and you pour a little bit of simple syrup over the top. That adds just a small amount of sweetness. Now, the caramel sauce is only water and sugar, a little tiny bit of vanilla extract, and a pinch of salt. And you're thinking to yourself, now, why would I use salt in something that's sweet? There's something that happens when you add just a pinch of salt to something that's sweet, and it brings out the sweet flavor. You can't really taste the salt that much. So if you go to the website, mirkwooddesigns.com, you'll find a link to the recipe, which includes not only the apple dumpling recipe, but a traditional caramel sauce. I hope you give it a try, and if you do, let me know what you didn't like about the recipe. I'd love to hear your feedback. You can email me, ruthann@mirkwooddesigns.com. Stay tuned for the grab bag segment. This time, I'm going to share with you my Halloween memories. Welcome back to Mirkwood Designs, Adventures in Creativity. I'm Ruthann Logsdon-Zaroff, and this is the Grab Bag. Since Halloween is just around the corner, I thought I would devote this Grab Bag segment to Halloween celebrations in my past and our son's past, and talk a little bit about dreaming up and making terrific and unique Halloween costumes. I am not a fan of store-bought costumes. I don't think I have ever bought a costume in a store in my entire life, and my mom never bought costumes for us either. She was a very frugal person, but in addition to that, she was also very creative. She was a fantastic seamstress, and we had great costumes. The Catholic school that we attended wouldn't allow us to dress as Superman or a bum or a bride to come to school near Halloween, because Halloween is right before All Saints Day. We would have to dress as our patron saint. My patron saint, my name is Ruthann, my patron saint is Saint Anne, who is the mother of Mary, who is the mother of Jesus, and so I dressed as Saint Anne. So throughout the years, my mom made great costumes for us, or I started making my own. My girlfriend Donna and I made fabulous costumes over the years. I mentioned specifically making one that was Noah and the Ark. I don't think I described the Ark carefully enough. So let me give you the instructions in case you decide you would like to make yourself an Ark. You take a large cardboard box. I think the box we used was probably about 3 feet by 3 feet by 2 feet. And we also took another piece of cardboard, which may have been the flaps from the box, and we made an A-line roof. And to make it fit on yourself, you need to kind of do some measuring. You need to cut a hole in the very top for your head, and then you cut two holes on the sides for your arms to stick out. And then you paint the box to make it look like it's made out of wood, and you paint shingles on the roof. So now the A-frame, your face can face out, and then the sides of the A-frame go over the sides of your head. And of course, your arms are sticking out the side. I remember that it was pretty uncomfortable. And then you take every kind of animal, stuffed animal. This is when you can use all those Beanie Babies that you've been collecting all over the years. And you glue them, or you tape them, or you secure them somehow all over the ark. Everywhere you can find a space, you put animals. And there you have an ark. And then you can have a friend, or you yourself can dress up as Noah. So you dress up in a long cape, and you have a staff, and you have a long hair and a long beard. At least that's how we figured Noah probably looked. He probably looked pretty tired too, having to take care of all of those animals. So that was one of the best costumes that Donna and I ever made. I remember dressing up as Herb Alpert, complete with a paper mache trumpet. Now, if you don't know who Herb Alpert is, you're too young. Anyway, he was a big pop star back in the day. He had a mariachi type band. I loved Herb Alpert music. I was not much into rock music back then. All my friends listened to the Beatles. I listened to Herb Alpert. I was such a nerd. I dressed one time as a fruit fly. I dressed one time as a paper bag. That's another really simple costume that you can make. You would take a cardboard box similar in size to the one you used for Noah's Ark, and you would take brown craft paper and tape it so that it went all the way down, and you would cut the bottom even so you would look like you were a paper bag upside down. Very simple. You could even put a store logo on the side if you want, but if you're going to do that, make sure you put the store logo on upside down too. And when I got a little bit older and after I was married, my husband and I used to attend the Michigan Renaissance Festival regularly. This was back when it was not quite so commercial. It's very commercial now, and I don't enjoy it as much as I used to. But the very first year we went, they announced they were having a costume contest. So 2 weeks after we went to the first Renaissance Festival, our first Renaissance Festival, I think it was the second, actually, in Michigan Renaissance Festival history, I went to the Detroit Public Library and I did all this research on Renaissance costumes. and I designed and made costumes for both my husband and myself. And so on the website, you can see a photograph of the costume that I made for myself, and it did win first place in the Renaissance Festival costume contest that year. I still have the mug that I won. When I was working for the company that I retired from a couple years ago, the group that I worked with at that time used to have a big costume contest every year for Halloween. They really did it up. It was so much fun. People went all out. It was a pretty big deal. They had a catered event and everything. Well, this one particular year, one of my coworkers looked amazingly like Drew Carey. If you remember that old TV show, Drew Carey Show, he was about the same size, and all he needed was a pair of glasses. And so I went to the store and I bought him a pair of black rimmed glasses like Drew Carey used to wear in that show. I actually think he kind of still wears the same pair of glasses now. I think that's his signature. And back at that time, I was quite a bit heavier than I am now. And I decided I was going to dress as Mimi. I went to the store and I bought myself a wig. This Halloween was the very next day, mind you. So this all happened in the matter of probably about 6 hours that I had in the evening before I went to bed. I went to the fabric store and I bought the most outrageous fabric I could find, which was black fabric with big yellow smiley faces all over it. And so I had the wig that looked like Mimi's crazy wild hair. And then I had this muumuu that I made out of the smiley face fabric. And you remember how Mimi would wear these garish makeup, blue eyeshadow, big eyelashes. She was just really something else. She was larger than life in more ways than one. Well, the next morning and at that time my hair was down to my waist. So the next morning I got up and I put all this makeup on, and I had to bind my braids around my head and stick the wig on my head, and I had this big bow in my hair, and I had this incredibly fabulous muumuu. My son was probably about 8 years old, and I had to take him to school. So I drove my son to school, and on the way I remembered I was supposed to bring refreshments, some of the refreshments for my team. I had to stop at the grocery store in that costume, and I went up and down the aisles in the store. People stopped in their tracks to stare at me, and at first I didn't realize what they were staring at, and then I would glance down and I'd see this outrageous smiley face muumuu, and I would realize I was dressed a little bit oddly to be out in public. And at lights, traffic lights on the way to work, people would look over and then they would look again and they'd see this outrageously dressed woman driving this little car. So I got to work, and thank goodness everybody else was wearing their costumes, so I didn't look quite so out of place. And my coworker Rob and I won first place. Yay for our costumes. After work, the funniest thing happened. I had to pick up my son from a latchkey program. And I got to the latchkey program, and you had to have ID to get in. It was a very secure building. And I went in, and the guard was not going to let me in the building. And I had to convince him that I was dressed in a costume, because believe me, I looked nothing at all like my driver's license. At that time, I had very, very long hair that was brown, and I didn't wear much makeup. I still don't wear much makeup. And I was dressed as Mimi with the blonde wild hair, a face full of makeup, and this outrageous dress. I didn't have time to change after work. Finally, he agreed to let me into the daycare area. The daycare workers would not release my son to me. I had to take off my wig and prove that I was his mother before they would release him. And Teddy came running up to me and he says, "Yes, that's my mama." And when I first became pregnant, I was really hoping, I have to admit this, and if my son Teddy listens to this podcast, I'm sorry, but at first I was really hoping he was going to be a girl, because I wanted to be able to make frilly dresses and cute outfits and, you know, share the things that mothers and daughters do. Well, I had a difficult pregnancy, and by 16 weeks I had to have an amniocentesis to make sure things were going well. And at that time they asked, "Do you want to know whether you're having a girl or a boy?" I was so thrilled to be pregnant, I didn't care about the mystery of not knowing. So I said, "Sure, tell me." And they announced it was a boy, and I was so happy. My husband was thrilled. As an aside, when I first became pregnant, I had told my husband, "Oh, I hope it's a girl." And my husband looked at me and he said, but I wouldn't know what to do with a girl. Which is kind of funny. I mean, he would have been a dad to a girl, right? I mean, daddies have little princesses. Well, my son was a boy, and I was a little bit dismayed thinking, what am I going to make for this kid because he's a boy? Well, when he was a baby, I made all of his clothes until I made a lot of clothes for him, and I still make clothes for him now because he has a huge vest collection, which we'll talk about in another podcast. But I was at my happiest when Halloween would roll around because I could use my creativity and my great love for making costumes on my poor little guinea pig of a boy. His first Halloween costume was a clown, and he looked so cute. He was 3 months old, and he had this adorable costume that was a big bulky clown outfit with ruffles everywhere and a big pointy hat with ruffles, and I put a little red dot on his nose and little red cheeks, and he looked so sweet. And then in following years, I dressed him up as the devil, as a lion. The lion costume got a lot of use because after Teddy wore it a couple of years, it was handed down to his cousin, who I think still has it. She's so petite, it may still fit her. I'm not sure. He was a dragon 1 year, and that particular year, we spent Halloween in Florida. My mom and dad used to live on Marco Island in the Gulf of Mexico. And it was not Halloween. I think it maybe was Devil's Night, which is the night before Halloween. And we were going to be traveling on Halloween itself. And I was afraid Teddy would miss being able to trick or treat. And I felt bad. And my mom came to the rescue, like she always did throughout my whole life. She arranged with all of her neighbors to expect Teddy to come trick or treating at their house. And my sister, who was also visiting, had a big surprise at her house. And that was a surprise to me as well. So we went from door to door in my mom's neighborhood, not even on Halloween night, but her neighbors were so sweet. And they loved seeing this little boy dressed as a dragon. And he trick-or-treated and got quite a nice haul of stuff, not only candy, but other gifts that the neighbors had given him because they were all elderly people and just loved having this sweet little boy. And he was really sweet when he was little. He's still sweet now. But when he was little, he was ultra sweet. He could charm the pants off of anyone. When we got to my sister Karen's house, she had a house right behind my mom and dad's house. When we got to my sister Karen's house, she had her whole living room all decked out like a big witch's castle. And she had a big cauldron. I'm not quite sure what she had boiling in there, but it was pretty scary. And she dressed as a witch. She did such a good job with her costume and makeup. Teddy had no clue that it was his Aunt Karen. By the time Teddy was 5, he was in school in the fall and the spring when we would usually go visit my parents. So we started celebrating Halloween at home. And the first Halloween when he was in school, he designed his own costume. He said he wanted to be a knight. He was very enthralled with knights in armor at that time. Found some pictures in some books and showed me what he wanted. And so I designed and made his costume for him. And when he went to kindergarten, they didn't dress. They had to get dressed while they were at school. So they would go to school in their regular clothes and then take their costumes, and the teacher would help them get dressed. Because his costume had so many pieces and was so detailed, I had to provide a diagram to help the teacher put his costume on him. I don't think she really ever forgave me for that. And if you remember in the first podcast I mentioned, he ended up leaving that school at Christmas time that year. I don't think the Halloween costume really had any bearing on that, but that lets you know how intense Teddy was. He had an idea in his mind of what he wanted to be for Halloween, and he was pretty insistent that that was the way it was. And other interesting costumes I might have mentioned before, he was a praying mantis 1 year. Again, that was a costume of his own design that I had to make because he wasn't quite old enough to sew. He was Peter Pan 1 year, complete with a Tinkerbell that sat on his shoulder and that lit up. And another year he was a playing card. Now that is a terrifically easy costume to make. If you want to make a fun costume, the way that you make a playing card is it's made like a sandwich board, which is a big flat piece in the front and a big flat piece in the back with two straps that go over your shoulders. And the playing card I actually drafted using a playing card. I drew a grid on a large piece of foam core, or you could also use a large piece of poster board, although the foam core is a little sturdier. And so you would draw a grid on that and then draw a grid on a regular playing card. For example, you would draw, say, a 4x6 grid on a small playing card, and then you would draw a 4x6 grid proportionally on your piece of foam core. And then you would just simply transfer each segment of the grid from the playing card onto the foam core. And I ended up painting the foam core with, I think I used actually not paint, but those really fat, fat magic markers that are about 2 inches. The actual felt part of the magic marker is about 2 inches. They're used for painting signs. And they were brilliant. It was really great. And then for the back of the card, I replicated a simple grid from a playing card. I did not use the fancy bicycle back or some of the other fancy backs. I think I used just a diamond back on the back of the card. So from the front, you would look like your playing card. And I used a king and a queen because my husband and I wore the costumes one time. So I wore the queen, obviously. Well, I don't know. I guess he could have worn it. It would have been different. So you would have I like the face cards. I think that they're the prettiest. You would have your face card on the front, and on the back, you would have what looked like the back of a playing card. They were simple, and they were fun to make, and they were pretty effective, too. So those are some of the costumes that Teddy has worn over the years. This year, because my son is very thin, I was hoping he would dress like Jack Skellington from Nightmare Before Christmas, and his girlfriend looks just like Sally from Nightmare Before Christmas. I offered to make their costumes and do their makeup. So far, I haven't heard anything back from them, but my son, being a member of the University of Michigan Men's Glee Club, already has tails. They have to wear the tuxedo with the tails. So he has the tails, and he has the striped morning pants that he wore in a play recently. He wore that in Sound of Music in one scene. So he already has most of his costume ready to wear. I would just need to make the big bat bow tie, which would be fun and easy to make, I think, and then do his makeup. I think he'd make a terrific Jack Skellington. So I'm hopeful that maybe in my next podcast, I can share a picture of my son as Jack Skellington. But like I said, he seemed pretty lukewarm to the idea, so I guess we'll have to wait and see. Maybe he's beyond having his mom make his Halloween costume, which is a really sad thing. To give you some ideas of other costumes that you might make that are pretty fun and pretty easy, why not go as a bunch of grapes? Now, the way you would do that is you would buy a bunch of purple or red or green balloons, and you would wear a sweatsuit, and you would have somebody first of all, you have to blow up the balloons, and have somebody pin the balloons all over your sweatsuit. The only problem with that is if it comes time to go to the bathroom, that might be a little bit tricky. You could dress as a candy bar or a tube of toothpaste. Both of those are fairly simple. You would just take a big piece of fabric, sew it down the sides, make sure that you have a head hole and arm holes, and then decorate the fabric. It's essentially a fabric tube as a tube of toothpaste or as your favorite candy bar. Those are pretty quick and pretty creative, and you're not going to see a lot of those walking down the street. I hope that inspired you to avoid the standard store-bought costumes and to be creative and make a fabulous, fun, original costume for yourself or for your child. Have a safe and fun Halloween, however you celebrate it. You can find links to my podcasts, show notes, projects, and much more on my website, mirkwooddesigns.com. That's MIRKWOOD, designs.com. While there, why not make a comment or drop me a line and tell me what's on your mind? My email address is ruthann@mirkwooddesigns.com. Ruthann is all one word, RUTHANN. Until next time, this is Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zeroff with Mirkwood Designs, Adventures in Creativity. And remember, creativity isn't a race. It's an adventure.